This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
You know, when you tell someone that you're cooking Korean food tonight, there's this almost immediate, very specific mental image that flashes in their mind.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, it's usually something sizzling loudly on a grill, right? Or maybe a bubbling stew that's just bright, vivid red, basically broadcasting heat and intensity from across the room.
Right, absolutely. The global perception of the cuisine is just so heavily dominated by that fiery spice or, you know, the complex fermentation of kimchi or that heavy savory focus on barbecue.
Exactly.
And, I mean, it is an incredibly vibrant dining culture, but it really only represents just one side of the coin. That's the food you go out for, or the food meant for socializing and big celebrations.
Well, today we are flipping that script entirely for you. We're going to explore a dish that offers this surprising, deeply comforting counter-narrative to that intense reputation.
Yeah, it's a great one.
So today's deep dive is all about kalguksu. And our mission here is to break down this beloved Korean noodle dish specifically for you, the curious home cook living outside of Korea who, you know, just wants to understand how to capture its absolute essence in your own kitchen.
Yeah, and what makes this particular dish so compelling is how profoundly it subverts all those heavy, slow-simmered, fiery stereotypes.
Totally.
I mean, we're talking about a meal that is renowned for being incredibly mild, soothing, and shockingly fast to pull together.
Yeah.
You really don't need a massive pantry of specialized chili pastes or like a full weekend to prepare it.
Let's actually start right there with the timeline because this is what caught my attention immediately. You can reasonably go from raw ingredients to a finished steaming bowl of kalguksu in about 25 minutes.
Yeah, 25 minutes. It's incredibly fast.
Which is wild, and it's widely considered an easy dish to master. But if we aren't relying on a massive spice rack, and we aren't simmering a bone broth for 14 hours, where is the identity of the meal actually coming from? Like, what drives the flavor if it's so quick and mild?
Well, to answer that, we really have to look at the name itself. So kalguksu translates directly to knife cut noodle.
Knife cut. Okay.
Right. And actually, for our Spanish-speaking listeners, our sources note it's often translated as fideos cortados a cuchillo. That physical manual cutting process, it's not just a descriptive flourish, you know?
Yeah.
It is the entire foundation of the dish.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The technique literally is the recipe.
Okay, I want to visualize this because when we talk about making pasta or noodles at home, I think a lot of people picture cranking dough through a metal machine to get these perfectly uniform flat sheets and then running it through another attachment to get mathematically perfect strands.
Exactly, the Italian pasta machine method.
Right. But knife cut implies something much more rustic. So if I use a hand cut noodle instead of a perfectly smooth machine extruded one, what actually happens in the bowl? Does it make a difference?
Oh, it changes the entire physical architecture of the soup.
Really? How so?
Well, when you take a sharp knife to a folded sheet of wheat dough, you're not creating a perfectly uniform surface. You're creating slightly rough edges.
Oh, okay.
You end up with this rustic irregularity, like maybe one noodle's a little wider, another's a bit thicker with more chew.
So it's not just about the rustic look. It actually alters the eating experience.
Fundamentally, yeah. Those rough, irregular edges, they act like microscopic hooks. They grab onto the mild broth in a way a smooth, glossy, factory-made noodle just never could.
That is fascinating.
And beyond that, because the edges are freshly cut and uncoated, they release surface starches directly into the liquid as they boil.
Wait, okay, that makes total sense. The starch from the freshly cut dough is leaching out. Does that play into how fast this comes together? Like, are we cooking the noodles directly in the soup base?
Yes, exactly. And that is a crucial piece of the 25-minute timeline. You aren't boiling a separate pot of water just for the noodles and then rinsing them.
Oh, you just drop them right in.
Right in. You drop those raw, starchy, knife-cut noodles straight into your boiling broth. And the starch release acts almost like a natural roux.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it slightly thickens the broth, changing it from a thin, watery liquid into something velvety that clings to the noodle.
So the noodle is actually seasoning and texturing the broth just as much as the broth is flavoring the noodle.
Exactly.
I mean, that is just a brilliant piece of culinary mechanics. The imperfection of the human hand chopping the dough is actually the mechanism that makes the dish work.
It's a perfect example of texture functioning as a primary ingredient. When you eat it, The varied thicknesses mean some pieces are perfectly al dente, while the thinner, tapered edges get a little softer and almost melt into the soup.
That sounds amazing.
It tells your brain immediately that human hands made this. You know, it's geared entirely toward comfort and digestion rather than overwhelming your palate.
And that actually brings up an interesting dilemma for a home cook who might be new to this because, you know, when people outside Korea think of Korean food, they have that vivid red image in their heads.
Right, the gochujang and the chili flakes.
Exactly. Is there a temptation for home cooks to drown this in chili crisp or gochujang because they think it needs to be, quote unquote, more Korean? Like, does a mild dish feel somehow lacking in authenticity to someone expecting heat?
Oh, it is an incredibly common trap. A cook abroad might look at a mild, slightly cloudy vegetable-based broth and think, you know, I need to fix this, I need to make it punchier.
Right.
But doing that entirely misses the point. One of the biggest lessons you can learn about Korean food culture here is the deep appreciation for subtlety.
So the cuisine isn't just a monolith of spice.
Far from it. Everyday Korean home cooking places a massive value on soothing flavor profiles. These dishes often serve as a necessary palate cleanser, a remedy for a cold, or simply, you know, a comfort on a rainy day.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so overspicing kalguksu doesn't make it more authentic. It actually strips away its intended purpose. You want to taste the delicate, sweet wheat flavor of the noodles. You want to taste the gentle warmth of the broth.
So how do you build that gentle warmth? Because if we aren't using spice to carry the dish, we obviously still need depth.
Right.
And the version of kalguksu we're focusing on today is surprisingly constrained based on our notes. It's an entirely vegetarian version. No pork, no beef, no chicken, no seafood.
Not at all.
If we strip away all the heavy meats and the intense spices, what is actually carrying the flavor in a 25-minute window?
You build it through rapid umami extraction.
Okay, rapid umami extraction. Tell me more.
Well, in a traditional Korean kitchen, even a mild broth isn't just plain water. It's often built on dried kelp, known as dashima, maybe some dried anchovies, or a really robust vegetable base. These ingredients release glutamates incredibly quickly when boiled.
Which totally explains the speed. You don't need to break down collagen in a beef bone for 12 hours. You can extract the savory essence of kelp or mushrooms in like 10 minutes.
Exactly the point. The lack of meat highlights the core philosophy of the dish. It isn't tied to a specific protein. The essence is the method, the knife cut, and the comfort. This makes it an incredibly adaptable template.
Let's talk about that adaptability, because for someone listening in, say, Ohio or London, they might not have access to a Korean grocer to find specific varieties of radish or traditional Korean zucchini.
It's true.
If a home cook abroad builds a broth strictly out of local vegetables they found at their neighborhood market, do they risk losing the Korean essence of the dish?
Not at all. In fact, utilizing what is fresh and local to you aligns perfectly with the ethos of Korean home cooking.
Really? So it's pretty forgiving.
Oh, absolutely. The dish is essentially a blank canvas designed to let the rustic noodles shine. If you understand the flavor architecture, meaning you need some umami, some subtle sweetness, and a bit of earthiness, you can absolutely substitute.
So how would you coach someone through that substitution? Like, if they're standing in a standard Western supermarket right now, what should they be reaching for to build that 10-minute mild broth?
Think about ingredients that naturally contain high levels of glutamates and natural sugars. So if you can't find Korean zucchini, a standard summer squash or zucchini works beautifully.
Okay, easy enough.
Right. And then throw in some brown mushrooms or shiitakes to replace the earthy umami you might normally get from dried anchovies.
Nice.
And here's a great tip. A standard white potato, sliced thinly, is a brilliant addition because it adds even more body to the broth as it cooks down. Then you use Allium's garlic, maybe some scallions or sweet onions, to just build out that savory baseline.
I love that. You're basically constructing a fast-acting flavor net to catch the starch of the noodles.
That's a great way to put it.
It's incredibly freeing, you know, to realize you don't have to hunt down an obscure ingredient to make this work. You can use what's local to you, provided you respect the mildness. But because this dish is essentially a blank canvas, it puts the onus on the cook to understand exactly what they're putting into the pot, right?
Yes, it requires total ownership of your ingredients because kalguksu in its purest form is just wheat flour, water, salt, and whatever broth you build.
Which means if you're cooking for a crowd, you are the one responsible for tracking things like gluten or soy. Like, if you decide to add a splash of soy sauce to your vegetable broth for extra umami, you've just introduced soy and potentially more gluten.
Exactly.
And if you use standard all-purpose flour for the dough, you obviously have gluten there too. It requires a bit of mindfulness, since our source notes mention allergens aren't explicitly specified.
Right, and that mindfulness extends to the culinary side as well, because beyond just dietary tracking, the biggest mistake a cook can make here is over-engineering.
Over-engineering? What does that actually look like in this context?
It looks like insecurity, honestly.
Insecurity?
Yeah, it's a cook who doesn't trust the simplicity of the dish.
Yeah.
They violate that no-meat profile by throwing in rich beef stock, chunks of heavy pork, or overpowering seafood, simply because they think a soup needs to be, quote-unquote, loaded to be a full meal.
I see. They lose their nerve and try to turn it into a heavy stew.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you completely overwrite the delicate balance. The heavy fats coat your palate, and you can no longer taste the subtle sweet wheat flavor of the handmade noodles.
Oh, that's such a shame.
It is. You lose the velvety texture created by the starch because it's competing with heavy animal fats. You turn kalguksu into something else entirely, and you lose the mild, soothing comfort that makes it so special.
I guess it takes confidence to serve something simple. You're trusting that the physical act of kneading and cutting the dough is enough to elevate standard vegetables into a deeply satisfying meal.
It's a true testament to the power of technique. And let's actually talk a bit about that dough, because if you're going to make this at home, understanding how the dough behaves is your key to success.
Yes. Let's get into it. What makes kalguksu dough different from, say, a standard Italian pasta dough that you might run through a machine?
Well, a standard Italian pasta dough relies heavily on eggs for richness, structure, and that golden color. Kalguksu dough is traditionally just wheat flour, water, salt, and maybe a tiny splash of oil.
No eggs at all.
No eggs. It is entirely a hydration game.
Mm.
You are aiming for a dough that is supple enough to roll out, but firm enough that the noodles don't turn to mush when you boil them in the soup.
Which requires gluten development. You have to knead it.
You do. And this is where the home cook gets to really connect with the food. When you knead wheat flour and water, you're manually aligning the proteins to create a gluten network.
Right.
That network is what gives the final noodle its characteristic chew. In Korea, this texture is often described as jolgit, which roughly translates to a satisfyingly bouncy, chewy texture.
Jolgit. I like that. So you mix the flour and water, you knead it till it's smooth, and then you have to let it rest, right? You can't just attack it with a knife immediately.
Oh, never. If you try to roll out freshly kneaded dough, it will fight you. It'll snap back like a rubber band.
Right, because the gluten is too tight.
Exactly. You have to let it rest for at least 30 minutes, usually wrapped in plastic so it doesn't dry out. That resting period allows the gluten strands to relax and the flour to fully hydrate. That's what allows you to roll it out into a large, thin sheet without tearing it.
And once it's rolled out, you fold it over itself a few times, usually dusting it with a little extra flour so it doesn't stick. And you just take a knife and slice across the folds, unfurl them, and you have your rustic noodles. It's incredibly tactile.
It is. And remember that dusting flour you use to keep the folds from sticking.
Yeah.
That is extra starch that ends up in your broth, further contributing to that velvety, thickened texture we discussed earlier. Every step of the process feeds into the final architecture of the dish.
It's all connected. Let's take a step back and look at the whole picture here. We started today with a perception of Korean food as fiery, heavy, and complex. But what we uncovered is a dish that is the complete opposite.
Completely.
Kalguksu is a masterclass in simplicity and speed, a 25-minute window into the everyday comforting side of Korean home cooking.
We found a dish defined not by rare spices, but by the physical rustic texture of taking a knife to dough. Those charmingly irregular chewy noodles creating microscopic hooks to capture a mild, subtle broth while releasing starch to naturally thicken the soup.
It's just a beautifully adaptable, vegetarian-friendly template. As long as you respect the mild flavor profile and the hand-cut technique, you can use the zucchini, the mushrooms, the potatoes you have right in your own neighborhood.
Exactly.
It proves you don't need to over-engineer a meal with heavy meats or intense heat to create something deeply satisfying.
It really challenges our assumptions about what makes a dish culturally significant, which, you know, leaves us with a rather profound question to ponder as we wrap up.
Oh, lay it on us.
If the essence of kalguksu is defined almost entirely by the physical action of taking a knife to dough and the philosophy of seeking mild comfort, rather than a strict, unchangeable list of regional ingredients, does that make it one of the most universally translatable traditional dishes in the world? Can a dish truly belong to one culture if its core philosophy can be perfectly replicated and its comfort perfectly felt using entirely different local ingredients halfway across the globe?
That is a brilliant thought to leave on. Does the dish belong to the soil it originated from, or does it belong to the hands holding the knife?
Exactly.
The only way to really answer that is to experience the process yourself. So grab some flour, mix some dough, and feel that gluten develop under your hands. Take a knife to it, drop those irregular rustic noodles into a simmering broth of your favorite local vegetables, and find out for yourself.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.